Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, live from the WNYC studios in Soho, and this is our very first Get Lit with All of It book club live radio event. We are mixing it up this summer and having our book club in real time on the air so you can speak directly to our author. Also, the video will also be available on demand later. We are thrilled to kick off our summer reading with an excellent debut novel from an exciting emerging author, Post-Traumatic by Chantal V. Johnson. And because Chantal's debut, because Chantal's book is a debut, our musical guest is making a debut as well, sort of. It's their indie label debut. We'll be joined by musical guest Muna later this hour. They just released a self-titled album that is getting raves. So let's get this started with some music mentioned in Chantal's novel. All right, now we got the mood set. That was Erykah Badu, who is one of the many musical artists mentioned in our Get Lit with All of It book club selection, Post-Traumatic, by our guest, Chantal V. Johnson. One of the characters in the book names her plants after diva singers. The pothos plant is called Aretha. The snake plant is called Beyonce. Badu is a ZZ plant. It is one of the casually informative details that made Post-Traumatic such a compelling book club read. The book's about a young Black Latinx lawyer, Vivian, who defends patients at a psychiatric hospital here in New York. On the outside, she has all the features of a success, a great education, a good job, cool friends, a one-bedroom apartment. But all of that masks great turmoil within. Vivian suffered abuse as a child, abuse that her mother failed to protect her from. Vivian has never fully dealt with that trauma and doesn't think she needs to. Here's a passage from early on in the book. Vivian didn't need therapy. For one, she didn't adhere to the biomedical model of mental illness and didn't want to be diagnosed, labeled, and quantified like her clients. And she didn't want to hear any overdetermined theories about how she'd been programmed by her dangerous upbringing either. I am completely sui generis, she thought. Third, she knew the names of all her problems already and believed she could read her way out of them. Also, she had all the jokes. Isn't the final stage of recovery when you can tell jokes about it? Lastly, she didn't need to pay someone to make her feel less crazy. So what happens when Vivian doesn't deal with all her stuff? Disordered eating, obsessive thoughts about men, constant paranoia about assault, and pushing away the friends who love her. When Vivian chooses to finally cut off her relationship to her family, the decision leads her down a spiral that might be difficult to come back from. In a starred review, Publishers Weekly said, "This is revelatory and powerful. We are so glad we're able to spend the month reading Post-Traumatic," and Chantal V. Johnson joins me now. Applause, everybody. Let's do it.
Thank you so much.
Welcome. We're excited to have you. Listeners, we are doing the Q&A portion of our Get Lit on the air live, so I don't have to ask the questions. You can ask Chantal the questions directly. It's so exciting. Our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, or you can Instagram, DM us, or tweet us at All of It WNYC. I know we have questions going already, but I want to set the table a little bit first. First of all, welcome and congratulations.
Hi, thank you so much, Allison. It's so nice to meet you.
When did Vivian come to you?
Oh, wow. Oh, we're getting right into it. I mean, in some sense, Vivian has always been with me. I was wrapping up law school. I had decided that I wanted to be a lawyer and a novelist. Very bold, thing to decide, mm-hmm. That you want to embark upon two very difficult careers. But I kind of cast around for subject matter and for inspiration. And I just kept thinking that I wanted to write a kind of trauma novel that I had never seen before, with a kind of consciousness that I had never seen before. I was very interested in things like hypervigilance, which I had never seen rendered in a novel before. And so I started thinking about this character who is experiencing a lot of trauma symptoms while also working in a very demanding career, mm-hmm. and also having a lot of fun in life, you know, kind of being a dynamic, really interesting person, despite or in addition to experiencing all of these trauma symptoms. And also, she's a woman of color, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was really just like, what have I not seen? Why have I not seen this? I'm going to do this thing that I haven't seen, inspired by me and my friends, who are just the most interesting people in the world.
By hearing you say something you've never seen before means on some level you were going to, you know, work your way just around tropes. There were certain tropes that weren't going to happen in this writing. What were some of them? And I'm curious if there were any that were hard to avoid.
Yeah. I mean, there are some things, like I've talked about this in interviews before, like very graphic tales of child abuse. I just wasn't interested in that. That's mm-hmm. just not part of this project. I was very focused on the aftermath of violent and neglectful childhood in someone who is very successful and high functioning. And so kind of refusing to be super graphic was one trope that I was kind of fighting against. That's probably the main one, but also I would say a humorlessness in survivor narratives that I just did not identify with fundamentally, because humor is very important to me and again to my friends and other survivors that I know. And so I think I wanted to write a survivor narrative that had a character who was just really, really alive. You know, and I named the character Vivian, which comes from the roots of like life and living, you know. And I guess the third trope, speaking of being alive, is the kind of like a girl has been murdered and she's like speaking from the grave. And I just was like, I literally just wanted to have a survivor who was alive.
I wondered about Vivian, because I thought Vivid, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
Getting Instagram questions already. This is Creative Ray Ting wants to know, how much of this story is autobiographical?
Yeah, that's a great question. People really want to know that. I mean, I would say what I have done is take a lot of my consciousness, give them to a fictional character and put her in situations that I have not been in, and kind of see what happened. So I took a lot of kind of my orientation towards the world, and then I gave them to someone who was not me. And then I wrote in the third person as a way to further distance myself from that person. But of course, I'm a writer and I take a lot of my own experience, but I also put it into like a craft fiction grinder such that it comes out being someone who I really don't identify with in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for writing in, Creative Ting. We want to hear from you. If you would like to send us a question for Chantal via Instagram at @allofitwnyc, or you can tweet to us. We'll also be taking calls in the next 15 or so minutes. She's mine for now. But that phone number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. If you'd like to talk to Chantal V. Johnson, our author, for our June Get Lit with All of It book club selection, Post-Traumatic. All right, let's get into some details, some plot details. Why does Vivian decide she wants to work with patients at a psychiatric hospital?
Ooh, that's a good question. is that answered in the book? I mean, I think there's that line about kind of, we can't all be feckless, and someone has to do this work. Mm-hmm. So why not Vivian? So I think she's drawn to the work in part because she is very interested in mental illness as being a manifestation of trauma. She has that moment with Miss G, where Miss G is ruminating about past abuses, and Vivian's response is empathy. And so I think she has that kind of orientation. I also think she has a radical mental health politics. Again, you know, a kind of both, that's a kind of politics that we don't see in political life, but it's also kind of politics that we don't see in books very much. Mm-hmm. So I think she has kind of political, she's, as she says, even in the quote you read, I think she's against the biomedical, solely biomedical conceptualization of mental illness. And I think on another level, she's also experiencing mental health issues. So she sees herself kind of in solidarity with these people. Though because she's escaped poverty, she has better ability to control, you know, she's self-medicating. Her clients mm-hmm. are being forcibly medicated. She has more freedom. She has more cognitive freedom, cognitive liberty, and physical freedom than her clients. But she also sees herself in that.
I'm always curious about the first couple lines in a book. And the first couple lines in this book, it was the new nurse's fault. She brought a butcher knife onto the children's ward to cut up watermelon for the kids as a treat. Mm-hmm. Were those always the first two sentences?
No, they were not. They were not. That was a kind of later in the game addition. I think the original beginning for a long time was the, they're both kind of, in a way, Vivian kind of making fun of someone else's reaction to something. Mm-hmm. But I think the first scene originally was that scene where I think there's just like a white person is trying to give a homeless guy a bagel and he doesn't want it. And then I think this intro came later. I wanted to put her in the workplace pretty early on, and I wanted to have her have a kind of activating or triggering event that then leads her to be really paranoid when she's on the subway. She doesn't connect those dots, of course, mm-hmm. but you know, something to stimulate her nervous system, and also a way of showing that the mental health professionals in the hospital aren't necessarily. Sometimes they're being really dumb and stupid,
and she's not afraid to call it out either.
Yeah. And Vivian has this great moment of daring, you know, mm-hmm. in that she gets to like come in and save. So I wanted to kind of show her being heroic in the beginning of the book. So this was a good way to do that.
We are talking about Post-Traumatic with Chantal V. Johnson. It was our June Get Lit with All of It book club selection. So we've been talking about, we haven't talked about the way her trauma manifests itself. I mentioned in the intro, and people who've read the book know that she had suffered abuse as a child. One of the ways that it manifests itself is she's really obsessed with people's body size. She's really obsessed with her own weight and body size, and she has some disordered eating. Sometimes she's unkind to herself. Sometimes she's unkind to other people. What is the focus on food and calories really about for Vivian?
Yeah, I think it's about so much. You know, I did a lot of research for this book, actually, because I wanted to get the trauma psychology right. And I read a lot of interviews and books about women in particular who deal with disordered eating. And one thing that came up a lot was abuse history. And another thing that came up was abuse that actually revolved around food. So people being deprived of food by their caregivers or caregivers mm-hmm. controlling how much people eat, that is also in Vivian's past. So I think in some ways there's a direct link to the, you know, when we talk about control, issues of bodily control and bodily autonomy, which have been taken away from women and people of all genders as of last week. You do see in many people that one way to deal with that lack of control in childhood is to exert it in an extreme way in adulthood. I also think that Vivian is obsessed with perfection and ideas of dignity that extend to the body, this idea of wanting to be unassailable, both morally and physically. And that's a way that can have relationships to trauma for sure, but there are also many people who have no trauma history and also experience that kind of intense perfectionism in multiple areas of their lives. And many, many women have that. So I thought about it as like, how can it be related to trauma, but there can also be like a greater applicability to many people who have body image issues, which is very hard not to in our society. And that's a way to like open the book up to people who aren't trauma survivors. The other thing I'll say about this is that I really wanted to have cellulite in a book. Because I would read these novels where people are engaging in disordered eating and they're not eating, they're throwing up, they're doing all of the things, but no one's writing about the actual experience of being in a body. And being in a body that one views as imperfect. And so that kind of the body dysmorphia is, again, something that I had not seen in a book. And I wanted to kind of get in there. You know, what does it actually look like when you're engaging in a obsessive ritual of analyzing your body and all of its faults? And Vivian does that with her psychology. She's judging her thoughts all the time. She's also doing it with her body.
We are talking about Post-Traumatic with Chantal V. Johnson. We'll have more of our June Get Lit with All of It book club event. Phone call about families. We'll talk about it after the break. This is All of It. My guest this hour is Chantal V. Johnson. We are talking about our June Get Lit with All of It book club selection, her debut novel, Post-Traumatic. There's a big decision that Vivian makes. She makes the decision to cut off her family. And our caller, Irene from the Bronx on line one, wants to ask you about it. Irene, you are on the air in 3, 2, 1. There you go. Hi, Irene.
Hi. Thank you very much. And Chantal, terrific book. And I wanted to ask you about the aspect of cutting off from your family, because it's sort of a taboo subject, as you say, rightfully so, in the book. And I think it's an important issue. Just quickly, a friend of mine works with foster care children, and when they're court-ordered visitation with the mother, the children revert back to having psychological problems, and it's important for them to just give up the idea of having a good family. So, I mean, we have toxic families out there, and I think your discussion of cutting off from the family is really important.
Irene, thank you so much for calling in. Chantal?
So I didn't necessarily know that I heard a question in there, but what I will say, thank you so much for your comment. I guess I'll just talk about kind of why I decided to write about estrangement in the book. I mean, I think it served multiple purposes for me. I think I wanted to, I tend to not like the kind of multi-generational family narratives, because I feel that I don't really read those books. And so part of my desire to write about estrangement was to write about a family that I recognized, to be honest, and to write a book that did not uphold the nuclear family as like the most social unit that exists. So I did have a kind of political agenda, covert political agenda to be anti-family propaganda, because I just see so much of that. And I think that can be alienating to a lot of people. I also think that art has the potential to just give people freedom, and to have a sense of allowing And so I wanted to give that to readers who are alienated from their families or are considering estrangement or just don't have like a totally non-toxic relationship to family. So that was really important to me. It was also a way to build tension between Vivian and her friends, mm-hmm. And a way to explore a moral issue from multiple sides. You know, Vivian and Jane from the very beginning of the book have a kind of a moral conversation about what people owe to their families, what Black people owe to their families, what immigrants and people of color owe to their families. And as the book goes on, Vivian and her friends diverge on how they think, mm-hmm. How they answer the question of filial obligation. And so I had my radical political agenda, and I also had, as a novelist, just a way to create tension between Vivian and these other characters, Jane and Christina in particular, who mean a lot to her.
We hold our book club discussions online before the events, and we asked our readers if they had been estranged from their family or mm-hmm. cut ties with their family, and 55% said yes.
Wow. Oh, wow. That is fascinating to me. That's so interesting.
It was interesting. I thought right away, and a lot of people responded right away. You know, I think in reading the book, part of Vivian's, that tension even within herself comes down to her education, the way she lives her life. And it seems like that's hard for her to be okay with that sometimes. That maybe she's sort of has a difficulty, maybe that, and it comes up looking down on her family mm-hmm. in a way that tension seemed, just one that she had a really difficult time navigating.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think she's probably ambivalent about that. I mean, I think she definitely defends them against potential detractors yeah. when she's going to visit her aunt. And she's like, I know how a white person would look at all of this and that would be wrong. and I don't look at it that way. And I mean, she basically says like, it's not like the class issues that she's afraid of or ashamed of. Like she's just literally afraid of people who abused yeah. her and allowed abuse to happen. And I think that's some of the tension that I'm trying to explore mm-hmm. in the book. I mean, I think it's perfectly possible that if Vivian hadn't been abused, I mean, she probably would not have estranged. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think she's ashamed of them for like class reasons or race reasons or cultural reasons. I think she's ashamed of her family because they continue to be abusive. She doesn't want to be a part of an abusive system because abusive systems implicate everyone who is in them. It's impossible yeah. to remain morally unimpeachable in general in life, but it's particularly impossible to remain not morally stained when you are in an abusive family.
We also asked our readers on Instagram whose side they are on in the Vivian's fight with Jane. 59% said they were on Jane's side. 41% said they were sided with Vivian.
Did anyone say they're both right and wrong?
I know, my math says that's 100%.
yeah.
Why did she get into this fight, and why did she let it escalate?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm the creator, so I'm just kind of pulling mm-hmm. the strings, okay. you know? Mm-hmm. And so I have to bring the book to a crisis point in some way, you know? And it's literary fiction, so what kind of crisis could there be, really? Mm-hmm. you know? I think a fight between friends, especially because Vivian has said from the very beginning of the book, like, I don't need therapy, I don't need anything, because I have Jane. So then... you know, narratively, I kind of have to take that away from Vivian. So I had to do something. But I think Vivian is looking to Jane to be her mirror. Like she has always looked to Jane to be the mirror. Yeah. And Jane is refusing in this moment to be the mirror for her. Jane is saying, I'm not choosing estrangement. And that's fine. That doesn't make me a bad person. That doesn't make my sister a narcissist. Like, she's a human being, and I'm going to choose to maintain a relationship with her. And if you, and so if Jane is, Vivian's accusing Jane of being a hypocrite, Jane is finally accusing Vivian of her hypocrisy. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things that friends can do, is they can call you on your BS, mm-hmm. right? So they're both calling each other on their BS, but because the intensity is ratcheted up because Vivian is trying to estrange from her family, it's not constructive. It just gets really destructive. But that's, Vivian kind of needs to go through an experience like this. She needs to lose Jane to figure out some important things about herself, I think.
There's a great line. She says, Jane says to Vivian, really, you're just a selfish person. You can't tolerate anyone's flaws but your own.
Yes.
Ow. Ow. That hurt.
Yes. Yes.
My guest is Chantal V. Johnson. The name of the book is Post Traumatic. It's our choice for Get Lit with all of it. There's a really heartbreaking scene in the book when Vivian is convinced that her cab driver is going to assault her. And she jumps out the window. Only she learns later that he passed her street because it was a one-way street. Mm-hmm. And she's seeing potential violence everywhere. Mm-hmm. How is this, her trauma from her abuse, affecting her just, her? I mean, we see how it affects her interpersonal relationships, her intimate ones, but just even the casual relationships. What does it do to the way she walks through the world?
Yeah, I think Vivian is just, this is classic hypervigilance and classic seeing threats everywhere, and the body and the brain being flooded with things like adrenaline and cortisol. And when I was thinking about trauma representation in books, I had seen some of, like, and there's a little bit of flashbacks in my book, but that's not really the main focus of the traumatic symptoms. Mm-hmm. I do think people overstate that a bit when they're talking about my book. There's actually not that many literal flashbacks. There's more what we call affective flashbacks. So emotional, physiological flashbacks. That are not, it's not like she's in the cab and then she's thinking about her abuse, right? It's not the classic, like, veteran PTSD, like you hear a car backfiring, you're back in the war. That's not really what we're doing here. We're doing more, there is a man, I am unaccompanied and I am alone with a man. And that is a familiar situation. When you are alone with men, they hurt you. This one's gonna hurt you. Also, she's under the influence, I should say, for much of the book. And so that kind of affective flashback is something that I was really interested in exploring in the book. But this is classic hypervigilance, and it's her brain is hijacked. Her body is hijacked. She is cellularly, she is time traveling, but it is emotional and it is cognitive. And it keeps her from being able to accurately discern risk, ironically.
I do want to point out there are parts of the books which are laugh out loud funny. And one of our book club members under the name Publishing Twins wrote, can you talk about the role of humor in the novel Post-Traumatic?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. That's my editor, Jean.
Hi, Jean.
Thanks, Jean. So humor, I mentioned this at the top, but just to say again, I wanted to infuse this book with humor from the beginning. And again, because myself and my friends are the funniest people in the world. And I think when I'm thinking about survivor humor in particular, there is just kind of nothing more revolutionary than surviving violence and laughing about it after. That is not allowed when you are in an abusive situation. Spontaneity is not allowed when you are in an abusive situation. Many people who have experienced child abuse were not allowed to be playful children. So what could be more revolutionary, outré, cheeky, disrespectful, disobedient than what Vivian and Jane do, which is kind of get together. And you know, they do a lot. But one of the things that they do is they create a safe space for each other to just be really dementedly funny about their life experiences. And that makes them really powerful to me, and really interesting. And again, wanting to infuse this kind of book about survival with as much brightness and lightness and levity as I possibly could, humor was a great way to do that, I felt.
Our last two questions are going to be about music. Dolores on Instagram says, I enjoyed your music selection. Is there a playlist available somewhere?
Yes, there is, on Spotify. Yes, the Little Brown Spotify page, there is a post-traumatic playlist made by moi. And it features a lot of feminist and gynocentric metal music and art pop. There's No Doubt on there. It's a really good playlist. Check it out.
There, you know, are so many good musical references in the book. Kate Bush, Erykah Badu. There's a whole great karaoke scene. And we actually asked our Instagram book club members, what's their go-to karaoke song?
Yes.
Someone said Band of Gold by Frida Payne. It's a song everyone loves. They just don't know it yet. Someone else said My Sharona by The Knack. It's easy to sing and people can join in quickly. Do you have a go-to karaoke song?
So many. I like to start with At 17 by Janice Ian, because it is incredibly wordy and it's just a good voice warm up. I also love to do Cloud Busting by Kate Bush, Just a Girl by No Doubt, but there's so many. those are just three.
And it seemed like music was really important to you in this novel. Why?
Absolutely. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Music is my favorite aesthetic. It's my favorite art form. I am the most open and receptive to music as an art form. I'm very promiscuous. I listen to basically everything except for bluegrass.
Bluegrass, kick to the curb.
But I listen to everything else, even folk, though I prefer psychedelic folk, freak folk. And so music just makes me really happy, you know, and I am a singer. I love to dance. I grew up in rave culture. And I just wanted to have as much music in the book as I possibly could without running afoul of the copyright laws. So the task was like, how do you write about music when you can't really put the lyrics in there? So I had to, you know, I had to like craft a dance scene. I had to craft a karaoke scene. I had to have people demonstrate their character by the kind of music that they listen to. You know, like pay attention to what kind of music Paula Pauline listens to. And she doesn't really have good music taste. And music was just a way for me to have fun, you know, in the same way that the humor was a way for me, the writer, to have fun. The conversations with Jane was a way for me to have fun. Music was a way for me to have fun. And I think it gives like a kind of intertextual dimension to the book. Like go out there and like listen to Kate Bush when you're reading chapter one, for instance.
You heard the lady. The name of the novel is Post-Traumatic. It was our June Get Lit With All of It book club selection. It's by Chantal V. Johnson. Chantal, thank you for taking our listeners' questions and thanks for being our book club author. We really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thanks to all the readers and everyone who asked questions.